president pose a grave national security threat and warrant his immediate removal from office. President-elect Joe Biden called Trump the most incompetent president in the history of the U.S.
He's not fit to serve. He's one of the most incompetent presidents in the history of the United States of America.
House Speaker Nancy Pelosi called Trump a very dangerous person, saying that his removal is an emergency of the highest magnitude.
If the vice president and the cabinet do not act, the Congress may be prepared to move forward with impeachment.
Pelosi said that she has instructed the House to move forward with an impeachment motion if Trump does not leave the Oval Office voluntarily.
It's difficult to remove a sitting president. You have the possibility of the 25th Amendment, but the 25th Amendment requires the vice president and a majority of the cabinet. And even then, if the president refuses, you then have to take it to Congress. That's hard. There's only a few days left in Trump's presidency. The other option is impeachment. That too is politically complicated and it takes time. And so it's difficult to do it very, very quickly. But I think it highlights something bigger, something more broad. And that's that the fact that the Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, actually went to the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the fact that it was the vice president who was working his way around the president, actually excluding the president from the chain of command, is something simply unprecedented. So it really highlights just how dangerous this actually is, and I think the realities of the difficulty of removing a sitting president.
It's not just the Democrats who seek to remove Trump. Republicans are also calling for his impeachment. They say what Trump did on Wednesday can happen any other time. He has already said that he will not attend Joe Biden's inauguration on January the 20th. But there's still a possibility that he can call another 50,000 people to Washington and create another deadly chaos. Many believe that the U.S. president can even do worse and launch nuclear war on his way out of the White House. That is why officials are trying to close every possible door to chaos. The U.S. president's prized Twitter account has been permanently suspended, and Facebook and Instagram have banned him indefinitely. In the meantime, Pelosi talked to the head of the U.S. military, seeking available precautions for preventing Trump from initiating military hostilities or accessing the launch codes. But although Trump's political power is draining away, his cult of personality still commands tremendous loyalty among his Make America Great Again fan base. That's the reason behind a recent joint statement from all 10 living former U.S. defense secretaries, in which they warned against the military interfering in a peaceful transfer of power.
When one considers how the United States portrays itself in the media and in folklore, it's easy to be fooled into thinking that the streets are paved with gold and everything is bigger and better in the US. However, recent events have clearly shown that the country is flawed to the core. It's hence why the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, has questioned just where this utopian image of the United States has gone, as he stated that today we can see what this big idol has turned into. The leader went on to question the rationale of those who still worship the United States, clearly suggesting that some are blinded by ignorance as they fail to see events unfolding before them in Washington and other major US towns and cities across America. Speaking on the economy, the leader also noted the crippling effect of the COVID-19 pandemic on the United States, with the world's highest death rate and numbers reflecting a huge slump in finances, with many people losing their jobs and businesses collapsing due to a lack of positive action by the US government. But the most valid point of all was the leader's analysis on the recent election that took place in the US, not focusing on the result, but on the process and aftermath, with the leader labelling the whole election as a fiasco, sparked of course by the outrageous actions by the outgoing president Donald Trump for inciting violence. In truth, Ayatollah Khamenei had been quoting similar views long before the arrival of the COVID-19 virus, the collapse of the US economy, and of course the disgusting behaviour demonstrated by Trump and his droogs. So did the leader have a point when he delivered his observations this time round?
He does have a point, because I think what people aren't recognising when they see the US from the outside is that it's going through a fundamental decline. That's hard to believe, and the decline is often not easily, if you like, recognizable. But let me just give you a few indicators. Since 2008, the United States has gone into a 200% increase, a surge in its national debt. $27 trillion is the current United States debt. That's, you know, 200% increase, as I say, over the last 10 or so years.
With the imminent departure of Donald Trump, the arrival of a new US president has left some people feeling optimistic of change, both in America and around the world. Many have questioned the notion of the US and Iran reconciling sometime in the near future under the presidency of Joe Biden. However, with the leader stating that some feel if this happens, Iran will become a paradise, will a relationship with the Americans genuinely benefit Iran?
Well, I think that, I points to this idea of people who may think that a deal with America will in some way give economic benefits to Iran overnight. This is not going to be the case. You know, the deals that the Iranians will have to do in order to really stand any chance of any kind of collaboration from America are, I think, are going to be morally impossible for Iran to go ahead with.
But the truth of the matter is, Iran's in no rush to reach out the hand of friendship to the US, with the Americans imposing sanctions on Iran, as well as assassinating Iran's chief counterterrorism commander, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani. It's also why Iran are not waiting for a knock on the door from America to rejoin the JCPOA. With Iran proving itself to be a successfully self-sufficient nation, as well as showing the world that it was and still is more than able to stand up and defeat the American maximum pressure policy, it's no wonder that Iran can stand tall, proud and confident in its rhetoric. With an abundance of natural resources, four seasons that gift Iran with a fertile and beautiful land, and of course a culture spanning back 5,000 years, it seems that Iran has a lot to be proud of and is already a slice of paradise.
This is A to Z. An introduction to Islamic lifestyle. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the Most Beneficent, the Most Merciful. Dear brothers and sisters, Assalamu alaikum. Peace and blessings of Allah be upon you all. This is A to Z, coming to you from IRIB English Radio, and I'm your host, Ali. This radio show is about Islamic lifestyle, and in each episode, we will be talking about a different lesson. Please stay with us till the end of today's program. Today's lesson, some negatives of materialism. Materialism has been predominantly associated with negative connotations and consequences. Individuals who pursue material wealth have personal striving for power, desires to impress, control, and manipulate others. They thus tend to forego investment in intrinsic values like family, friends, contribution to the community, and self-actualization. These are believed to be the drivers of life satisfaction or well-being. Due to unreasonably high goals and expectations materialists set for themselves, they tend to evaluate their standard of living unfairly or poorly. This leads to reduced material well-being. An individual's happiness or satisfaction with his or her standard of living, that's called the well-being, the material well-being, And what materialism is doing is it's increasing that hatred towards our own lifestyles. It is instilling us with dissatisfaction, right? And it, in turn, negatively affects emotional well-being and life satisfaction of a person. So now, how many people do you know around you who are seeking divorce? Why do you think they're getting divorced? Well, one of the major factors is this materialistic lifestyle and materialistic way of thinking. This is where it all begins. Sometimes they don't even realize. If you dig deeper and analyze the situation, how did they get to a point where after being married for X amount of days, months, or years, now they're deciding to apart? Why? It is materialism in most of the cases. Welcome back, dear listeners. Today we are discussing the negatives of materialism. Of course, it's an exhaustive list and we're not going to be able to give it all to you here, but we just wanted to highlight the negative aspects of materialism. And today we brought up for you how it brings about a dissatisfaction in one's life. Increased materialism means increased dissatisfaction. Okay, you want to be satisfied in your life. You want to be satisfied with what you have, your surroundings. Materialism is your enemy. And we talked about divorce. Why do you think these divorce rates are going up? You dig deeper, you see that in most of the cases, if not all, it starts with the material expectations of one's life. So once you start thinking on materialistic lines, this is where it leads you. Studies in various countries in the US, Europe, and Asia have confirmed the negative relationship between materialism, life satisfaction, and well-being. Materialism's association with self-centeredness, envy, greed, miserliness can lead to some negative outcomes like unhappiness. Hey, we all want to be happy. Why are we unhappy? What is making us unhappy? You dig deeper, you do some introspection, and you realize these are the negative material expectations that I have for my life that's making me unhappy. Those who have strongly internalized materialistic values also reported higher levels of unhappiness and lower self-actualization. Young people's heightened focus on materialism in the US, for instance, led them to have negative attitudes towards school and performed poorly in school. Islam, on the other hand, provides the model of contentment, which brings about satisfaction and happiness in one's life. So instead of that materialistic lifestyle and thought process, Islam has provided us with the model of satisfaction. It's also called qana'ah, right? You have to be satisfied with what you have and thank Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala for it. What does it bring you? It brings you happiness and satisfaction in your life, in your family life, right? So this is the lesson of today. Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, thank you very much for staying with us till the end of today's episode of A to Z. Don't forget to log on to our website at www.parstoday.com, Call of Islam page. We leave you all in the care of Allah. Till next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
In the limelight. article you're about to hear under the heading Graphs Show That Black Scientists in the United States Are Underrepresented at Every Level has been authored by Betsy Ladyzetz, who is a freelance science writer based in Brooklyn, New York, United States. Stay with us for more of Betsy Ladyzetz's article. Nationwide protests in the United States in response to the police killings of George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, and other unarmed black men and women in the first part of 2020 inspired calls to action within academia's ivory tower. Social media movements brought attention to discrimination faced by black students and professionals throughout the science, technology, engineering, and mathematics pipelines. U.S. black residents studying and working in STEM fields are underrepresented at every level, from undergraduate degree programs to the workforce. The academic environment fails to support black students, says economist Gary Hoover at the University of Oklahoma in Norman. Black students in science, technology, engineering, and mathematics are some of the most talented people around, and if the environment isn't going to be welcoming, these folks just take their talents elsewhere. More U.S. students are getting science and engineering degrees than ever before, but the gap for black and African American students in these fields has been stubbornly wide, as population-adjusted figures show. In 2018, the most recent year for which data is available, about 238 of every 100,000 U.S. residents earned a science, technology, engineering and mathematics bachelor's degree. If the black community was adequately represented in science, technology, education and mathematics higher education, its rate would be similar. 238 of every 100,000 black residents would have earned these degrees. Yet only 161 of every 100,000 black residents had done so. The gap continues into graduate school. In 2018, African-American residents were 12.3% of the U.S. population, but only 8.4% of bachelor's graduates, 8.3% of master's graduates, and just 5.5% of doctoral graduates. From 2000 to 2018, the rising number of African-American students in U.S. science, technology, engineering, and mathematics degree programs mirrored the upward trend of science, technology, engineering, and mathematics students overall, but the representation gap held firm. Displaying the graduation figures by population makes clear that black students are earning science, technology, engineering, and mathematics degrees at lower levels than black people are represented in the overall U.S. population. As African-American science, technology, engineering, and mathematics students make their way up the academic ladder, they may face learning and research environments that are unsupportive or actively hostile. In a 2018-2019 study by the American Institute of Physics, black students in physics reported that they commonly experience a lack of financial support, as well as microaggressions, small interactions in which peers or superiors question a person's presence or performance due to racially charged bias. These experiences negatively affected the person's sense of belonging in the field. The study results were based on a survey of 232 students, 53 of whom identified as black or black biracial. In the survey, 42% of black physics students reported that their department creates a supportive environment most times, compared with 53% of their white colleagues. 4% of the African-American students reported that their department never creates a supportive environment. None of the white students selected this response in the survey. as I reflect on my own academic journey, there were fewer and fewer black students in my program, says anthropologist Stephanie Poindexter of the University of Buffalo in New York. Stephanie Poindexter was one of the very few black students studying primates in her undergraduate program, and representation narrowed further as she progressed towards her PhD. What I see is a lot of untapped potential, Poindexter says. Interested students of color who are not fostered into higher degrees in the same way that other students are fostered. Within the United States science, technology, engineering, and mathematics workforce, black scientists are also underrepresented, as are Hispanics and Latino and Native American scientists, according to a 2017 official government data. In 2017, black residents, Hispanics or Latino residents, and Native Americans and Alaskan Natives were severely underrepresented among U.S. scientists, engineers, and healthcare professionals when compared with the overall populations for these identities. Among 11 science, technology, engineering, and mathematics professionals reviewed by the National Center for Science and Engineering Statistics, or NCSES, only one field demonstrates a rate of black representation that is close to the overall population. 92 of every 100,000 black residents are social scientists, compared with 122 of every 100,000 U.S. residents overall. The disparity is especially severe in engineering. For example, 29 out of every 100,000 U.S. residents are chemical engineers, compared with 2 of every 100,000 black residents. Young black potential engineers have few role models that look like them and or come from similar backgrounds that they can emulate, manifesting in a deficit in the younger students cultivating these skills, says Aaron Kyle, a senior lecturer in biomedical engineering design at Columbia University's School of Engineering and Applied Sciences. Aaron Kyle also notes that minority scientists may be cited less than their peers, leading to challenges in career advancement. Among U.S. engineers, black representation is lowest in chemical engineering. Disparities in salary are found in most, but not all, science, technology, engineering, and mathematics fields. Computer science has the largest disparity, with a median annual salary in 2017 of $97,000 for white professionals, compared to just $72,000 for black professionals in computer science. There are so few working black mathematicians that the NCSES couldn't even make a comparison. Once employed, U.S. black science, technology, engineering, and mathematics graduates tend to be paid less than their colleagues from other racial backgrounds, according to 2017 data. When black students shift to other tracks, black communities suffer from a lack of doctors, lack of researchers and engineers who directly understand their experiences and needs. To improve black representation in science, Poindexter, Hoover and Kyle all say that solutions must include new offerings of grants, promotions and other research programs dedicated to supporting black science, technology, engineering and mathematics students from elementary school into the workforce. According to Poindexter, there needs to be a concentrated effort and financial commitment to balance the scales in the next 1 to 5 years.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en. The Last Savior.
Oh, the Savior of mankind, please show us a sign.
To the designer of the human civilization that is established on the unity of Almighty Allah. To the redeemer of human volition and thought.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. May Allah's peace and blessings be upon the Holy Prophet of Islam, Muhammad, and his purified progeny. Dear brothers and sisters all over the world, assalamu alaikum and welcome to another episode from a series of The Last Savior from IRIB English Radio and our discussion concerning the doubts or misconceptions on this very important topic. For this cause, we have invited Islamic researcher Sheikh Murtada Karimi from Qom Seminary Schools to help us answer the questions that we pose in this series of shows. Sheikh Murtada, assalamu alaikum and welcome to the show.
Wa alaikum assalam and thank you for having me. I was born in 1981 and I joined the Hausa Seminary of Qom in 1994, so it's about 25 years that I'm studying the Hausa Seminary of Qom. And beside fiqh and usul, or jurisprudence and the principles of jurisprudence, I have studied logic, Arabic literature and grammar, Islamic philosophy, and more importantly, Islamic theology. I also have my BA in Islamic Theology from Imam Khomeini Institute for Education and Research in Qom. And then I continued my education on monotheistic religions. I mean, I had my MA in this field from the University of Religions and Islamic Denominations. And I have my PhD in Shia Theology from University of Tehran. My PhD was about an analysis of the viewpoint of one of the false claimants with regards to the knowledge of the Imam.
Thanks for accepting the invitation. Dear listeners, if you remember, we have already been talking about the doubts that were asked and were posed by the followers of fake believers or like fake claimers on Mahdawi or Mahdism, namely a person in Basra in Iraq. And now from today and from now on, inshallah, we shall talk about some doubts and misconceptions posed through a Wahhabi approach on Shiaism. Namely, the first question that we want to ask from the respected guest speaker of the show. Sheikhuna, it is sad, and definitely all the Shias deny this claim, that Shias at the time of the birth of Imam Mahdi alayhi salam, contemporary to the life of Imam Hassan al-Askari, and let's say the demise and martyrdom of Imam Hassan al-Askari, and also the birth of Imam al-Zaman and Imam Mahdi alayhi salam, denied the birth of Imam. Is it true or not? Is this claim a valid claim to believe or not? If I'm asked, as the follower of Ahlul Bayt, all the people would deny the same doubt, but I want to see what is the scholarly answer to this question.
As you know, recently, I mean, in the recent decades, many of the Shia books have been translated into English languages, and also they have been available through some softwares, and many people, they have access to them. Now, unfortunately, in some cases, especially the Wahhabis, who are against the Shia beliefs, they have referred to some of the books of the Shia and they have ignored the others. And referring to some of the points in these books, they have brought about some doubts against Shia beliefs, and in our case, against Mahdawiya. So, as you mentioned, one of these Wahhabi scholars, recently he has written a book. He has analyzed the viewpoints of Shia school of thought when it comes to the situation of the Shia after the demise of Imam al-Askari alayhi salam. He says the following. So I try to mention all his claims so that we have a good understanding of his claims.
Thank you.
He says that the state of the Shia after the demise of Imam al-Askari alayhi salam should be taken into consideration because it has a very close connection to the emergence of the concept of occultation or ghibah. He says that after the demise of Hassan al-Askari, Imam al-Askari alayhi salam, in the year 260, there was no successor for him, and the Shia did not see any child for Imam al-Askari alayhi salam. And then he says that the Shia books have confessed to this fact. And that is why he claimed that the Shia, they became astonished somehow, because always they believed in a living Imam. And right now, after the demise of Imam al-Askari alayhi salam, they saw that there is no successor. And they believed that the earth could not be without a divine proof, without Hujjah. So many of them were in this situation of astonishment, and that is why they were divided into different groups. Now he quotes two Shia scholars. One of them is Nobakhti and the other is Qummi. And he says that according to Nobakhti, after the demise of Imam al-Askari al-Islam, Shia were divided into 14 groups. And according to Qummi, they were divided into 15 groups. Mm-hmm. So he says that this is the viewpoint of the Shia scholars.
True.
Which shows us that not all the Shia believe in the concept of Mahdism. And then he continues and says that even after these two scholars, there were more divisions. And according to another Shia book, they were divided into 20 groups. And maybe even more than that after it. So somehow, first of all, he has two claims. This author, he claims that, first of all, most of the Shia denied the existence of a successor for Imam al-Askari alayhi salam and a child for him.
Yeah.
And second of all, the concept of Imam Mahdi, who is in occultation, was forged by some Shia scholars to help these poor Shia. You see, the Shia did not find any Imam.
Yeah.
So the Shia scholars, they brought about and forged that there is an Imam, but he's hidden. He is in occultation, so that they could answer the doubts of the Shia. So these are two claims mentioned by this Wahhabi scholar. Now we have...
Actually, the second is the continuation of the first.
Yes.
Wherever you be, I'll be with you, 'cause you're the one my heart is to meet you.
First of all, the point is that when we refer to the Shia books, we read that the great majority of the Shia at the time of Imam al-Askari alayhi salam and after his martyrdom, they believed in Imam al-Mahdi alayhi salam when we refer to the books. So to claim that most of the Shia, they did not believe in a child for Imam al-Askari alayhi salam is against the books of history and the collections of hadith. Now, what matters here is that the claim of 14 sects or 15 sects after the demise of and martyrdom of Imam al-Askari alayhi salam, It is true that Naubakhti, one of the Shia scholars, has mentioned that. It is true, we are not denying that. But first of all, you cannot find it in the other Shia books. I mean, almost all the Shia scholars believe that after Waqifiyya, who believed in Imam Kadhim alayhi salam as the last Imam, we do not have any other division among the Shia. Waqifiyya were the last division which was made among the Shia. So according to the Shia scholars, whoever believes in Imam al-Rida alayhi salam believes in 12 Imams.
Very true. Just to ask a question regarding the last sentence that you said. You said that there is no other sect in Shiism except the Waqifiyya. So what do we have to do about Zaydiyya and others who
believe? No, my point is that after Waqifiyya, there is no other division.
Yes, that's true. Thank you.
So before Waqifiyya, yes, we have had Kaysaniyya, of course, who were disappeared. We have Zaydiyya, who still today they exist. We have Ismailis.
Yeah.
But the point is that according to the Shia scholars, whoever believes in Imam al-Rida alayhi salam, he believes in 12 Imams.
Very true.
Because from the time of Imam al-Rida alayhi salam, there is no other division.
Very true.
Although there were some, new phenomena, like Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam being chosen as an Imam when he was a child. But there is no division. And it was, according to many scholars, it was because of the efforts of Imam al-Rida alayhi salam in explaining the position of imamate and so on and so forth. There are different reasons why there is no other division.
Very true.
But even if you accept the claim of Naubakhti, first of all, when this Wahhabi scholar claimed that the Shia were divided into 14 groups, we should not think that, okay, all of them were the same in quantity.
Yeah.
So Ithna Ashari, the 12 Shia, was one of these 14s, and the other 13s, they were also the same in number. No, it is very likely that the great majority of the Shia were the 12 Shia, and this is confirmed by other Shia books. And if there were any other division, they were very, very few in number, to the extent that they were not mentioned by most of the scholars.
Yeah.
So regarding this, for example, Sheikh al-Mufid, one of the greatest Shia scholars, he says that when Imam al-Askari alayhi salam passed away, the great majority of the Shia, they believed in the imamate of Imam al-Mahdi alayhi salam. They believed in the fact that he was born to Imam al-Askari alayhi salam, and the fact that his name, like the name of Imam al-Mahdi alayhi salam. And the same has been mentioned by Sheikh al-Saduq in Kamal al-Din. He says that this is the argument of Sheikh al-Saduq. He says that regarding those who deny the existence of Imam al-Mahdi alayhi salam, we ask him about the imamate of 11 imams before Imam al-Mahdi alayhi salam. If they believe in 11 imams, then he should believe in Imam al-Mahdi alayhi salam as well, because of the narrations of these 11 imams about the imamate of Imam al-Mahdi alayhi salam. So he wants to prove that the Shia who believe in 11 imams, including Imam al-Askari alayhi salam, they should also believe in Imam al-Mahdi alayhi salam.
Very true.
Now, also the Sunni scholars, many of Sunni scholars, although they do not believe in Imam al-Mahdi alayhi salam as the promised Mahdi, they believe that Mahdi will be born in future, but many Sunni scholars, they have approved that a son was born to Imam al-Askari alayhi salam, and the Shia believe that he is the promised Mahdi.
You said some of the Sunni brothers do not believe in Imam Mahdi as the promised Mahdi?
They do not believe in...
The only difference, I think, is about his birth, whether it happened or not.
Yeah, my point is that they do not believe in son of Imam al-Askari alayhi salam as the promised Mahdi.
Yeah, that's something else, but they believe in the promised Mahdi.
I mean, Mahdism is a common belief of all the Muslims, and they believe that Mahdi will be born in future.
Very true.
My point is that although they do not believe in son of Imam al-Askari alayhi salam as Imam Mahdi, but they confess that a child was born
from progeny of Prophet of Islam.
Yeah. A child was born to Imam al-Askari alayhi salam. Because when it comes to Imam al-Mahdi alayhi salam, this is one of the common questions. Some people question whether Mahdi is historical or not. meaning that whether Imam Asghar alayhi salam had a child or not.
Sheikh, thank you very much. We are closing, actually, we are approaching the end of the show. Just in order to make our argument in brief, in two sentences, what is the gist of this discussion for today's show?
Of course, we need to continue, but the first point is that the great majority of the Shia believed in Imam al-Mahdi alayhi salam. This is against the claim of this Wahhabi scholar. And second of all, even the Sunni scholars, which I will discuss in details, they have mentioned that a son was born for Imam al-Asghar alayhi salam.
Thank you very much, Sheikh, and you respected listeners for staying tuned with The Last Savior from My Arab English Radio. Inshallah, we shall continue the discussion in the upcoming sessions. Join us then. Till then, I live in Allah's protection. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Allahumma.
In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. O Allah, protect your representative, Al-Hujjah bin al-Hasan, Imam al-Mahdi, and send salutation upon him and his ancestors, now as well as all the times. Be his guardian, protector, guide, and assistance. Help him in his path and be watchful for him till you let him rule over the earth willingly and cause him to live in it for a long time.
U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo has cancelled a trip to Europe at the last minute after European officials were publicly critical of President Donald Trump's role in last week's storming of the Capitol building in Washington. The article you're about to hear has been written by The Guardian journalist Julian Borgia. The piece is titled, Pompeo Scraps Europe Trip After EU Leader Calls Trump Political Pyromaniac. Stay with us for more of Julian Borgia's article. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo has cancelled a trip to Europe at the last minute after European officials were publicly critical of President Donald Trump's role in last week's storming of the Capitol building in Washington, the seat of the U.S. government. The official reason for the cancellation of the trip, originally to Brussels and Luxembourg, was the need to coordinate with a transition team from the incoming Joe Biden administration. But it comes after the unprecedented attack on American democracy that stunned many world leaders and U.S. allies. The Luxembourg leg of the trip was called off on Monday after Luxembourg's Foreign Minister Jean Asselborn called Donald Trump criminal for inciting the attack. Jean Asselborn described the outgoing U.S. president to RTL Radio as a political pyromaniac who must be brought before a court of law. The Reuters news agency and Fox News both quoted diplomatic sources as saying it was Luxembourg that had called off the meeting, a devastating snub from a tiny country for a Secretary of State that continually claims to have restored swagger to the U.S. State Department. Mike Pompeo was also due to meet the Belgian Deputy Prime Minister and Foreign Minister, Sophie Wilmers, who tweeted, whilst the assault in Washington was underway, Sophie Wilmers tweeted, "These images are shocking, also because they hurt our democratic ideals." they show the extent of President-elect Joe Biden's task, which will be to unite American society around a common project. We trust him to do that. Meanwhile, Jens Stoltenberg, the NATO Secretary General who was due to have a dinner with Mike Pompeo, had described the scenes in Washington as shocking. Jens Stoltenberg said, "The outcome of this democratic election must be respected." A NATO spokesperson confirmed that Mike Pompeo had cancelled on Tuesday, 12th of January, giving as a reason the need to focus on the transition of power in Washington. Meanwhile, the Reuters news agency reported that European Union officials had declined to meet Mike Pompeo on his last foreign trip. But a European Union spokesperson denied there had been any plan or request for meetings with EU leaders. The US State Department in a statement attributed the cancellation to transition work before President-elect Joe Biden takes office on 20th of January, even if, until recently, Mike Pompeo had been reluctant to unequivocally recognize Joe Biden's election win. Also on Tuesday, the U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, Kelly Craft, canceled a planned visit to Taiwan. The U.S. State Department declined further comment on European officials' rejection of meetings with Mike Pompeo. The cold shoulder was a contrast with Mike Pompeo's previous visits to Brussels, which is home to NATO and the European Union headquarters, over the past 3 years, where he has given keynote speeches on US policy and met the EU's chief executive, even as Europe balked at Donald Trump's foreign policy. Meanwhile, US Vice President Mike Pence, in a letter to House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, said he will not invoke the 25th Amendment. This means Congress will begin impeachment proceedings on Wednesday, 13th of January. Four Republican representatives, including third-ranking GOP member Liz Cheney, have said they'll vote to impeach Donald Trump. The President of the United States summoned this mob, assembled this mob, and lit the flame of this attack, Liz Cheney said. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi has been named as impeachment managers. Representative Jamie Raskin will be taking lead, working with Diana DeGette, David Cicilline, Joaquin Castro, Eric Swalwell, Ted Lieu, Stacey Plaskett, Joe Nagusa, and Madeleine Dean. Representatives for the FBI and the Justice Department said more than 160 case files have been opened in connection to the violence at the Capitol building in Washington. Michael Sherwin, the acting U.S. attorney in D.C., said that alleged rioters face a mind-blowing range of crimes, including felony, murder and sedition, as well as conspiracy. Also, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell has told colleagues that he believes Donald Trump committed impeachable offenses, according to the New York Times. Mitch McConnell has also said that he's glad the House is moving forward with impeachment because he thinks it will make it easier to push Donald Trump out of the Republican Party.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم.
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel.
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
The West is obliged to lift the sanctions against Iran immediately. Imam Khamenei used to address the whole nation on the anniversary of the January 8, 1978, which is 19th of Day Uprising, in the presence of thousands of people from Qom in the Husseiniyah of Imam Khomeini. Western countries and our enemies are obliged to stop this malicious move immediately, the imposition of sanctions against the Iranian nation. This is their duty. This is grave, unreasonable enmity to the Iranian nation. They are showing hostility towards the Iranian nation, not just towards the system of the Islamic Republic and its government. It is their duty to immediately put an end to this move. When the other side fails to honor all of its commitments, there is no reason for Iran to honor all of its commitments.
Your light and love, all I see. Nothing more I'd ever want to need. My Lord, my Lord, protect me from dishonor. Grant me faith to be stronger.
I have repeated this time and time again, and I wish to repeat it one more time. We should assume that sanctions will not be lifted. Of course, the effects of sanctions are gradually diminishing, but we should suppose that they will remain. Therefore, we should formulate plans for the economy of the country in such a way that we will not be faced with any difficulties even if sanctions continue, and even if the enemy continues to play these games. The 19th of Day can be described as the first Ibrahim-like blow to the body of the great idol. It was the first blow delivered to the great idols, the U.S., by the people of Qom, and it continued after that. Just look at the present situation in the U.S. to see in what state the great idol is at the present time. Such is the state of their democracy. Such is their election fiasco. Such is their human rights. In accordance with American human rights, every few hours or every few days, a black American is murdered on the streets without any reason and without any crime. And the murderer is not legally pursued in any way.
Alhamdulillah, alhamdulillah, all praises to Allah.
To Allah. Around the World with Reporters.
As things stand, it is very unclear how many people in the EU have so far actually received a COVID-19 vaccine, how many doses are currently being sent to each of the 27 member states, and when various groups can expect to get the jab. EU lawmakers have been discussing the issue in the European Parliament.
European Union citizens have a lot less vaccines available to them than they should have. The European Commission has planned this badly. Perhaps they were too bureaucratic.
On the 15th of October last, the European Commission set out clear guidelines to encourage each government in the EU to prepare for vaccination rollout, including the need to have sufficient numbers of trained personnel.
We invite the members to reflect on making sure that the necessary infrastructure is in place, that the necessary equipment is in place, taking into account the technical specificities of the vaccines.
Despite being given 2.5 months' notice, many EU countries did not prepare. Vaccines were left in boxes instead of being put into people's arms. We have been speaking to citizens about the vaccine rollout.
Things are not that well done at the moment. I think that we need maximum information about everything. People need to know.
It was too slow, but now we have vaccines, then we must quickly act.
Yeah, I think it's better to have done it safely, but I mean the price to pay is that it may take a bit longer.
More people have now been vaccinated in the UK than in all of the 27 EU member states combined.
Could we have been doing more about creating better capacity building for the manufacturing of the vaccines? And could we have done more in order to adjust the expectations from the citizens about the speediness of how we roll out these vaccines?
Some lawmakers say the credibility of the EU is being undermined by the fact that some member states, such as Germany, Denmark and Cyprus, are seeking extra vaccines outside of the European Commission's vaccine strategy. With the Pfizer, BioNTech and Moderna vaccines having already been approved for use in the EU, the European Medicines Agency is due to give the green light to a third, the AstraZeneca vaccine, on the 29th of this month. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Iran's oil ministry has signed major investment agreements with domestic contractors in a bid to boost crude oil production. As part of the deals, the National Iranian South Oil Company and the Iranian Offshore Oil Company agreed to contract out major onshore projects in four oil-rich provinces, as well as offshore projects in the Persian Gulf, to domestic companies. The projects are worth $1.2 billion. Oil Minister Bijan Namdar Zanganeh says this is the last stage of a plan that aims to boost Iran's crude output by some 300,000 barrels a day.
We have pursued this plan since a few years ago, and today the 31st contract was signed. The agreements will ramp up the output by increasing the recovery factor of our oil fields. This is estimated to add about $1.5 billion annually to our total oil income.
In 2018, Iran was the third largest oil producer in the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries. The country's oil production has almost halved to 1.9 million barrels a day since U.S. President Donald Trump withdrew from the 2015 nuclear deal and reimposed unilateral oil embargoes on Iran 3 years ago. As a result, Iran's exports have dropped to less than 1 million barrels a day, down from 2.5 million. Zanganeh says Iran plans to increase its oil production by more than twofold next year, to 4.5 million barrels per day.
Due to the sanctions, the share of oil exports in our annual budget has slashed by 14%, but the restrictions have pushed us to discover new domestic capacities to keep the oil industry afloat. All of these contracts have been signed with Iranian contractors. Furthermore, over 70% of the needed equipment are manufactured indigenously.